I'm going to start off this week with two words that have been dominating my life for the past, oh, I don't know, 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks or so. And those two words are, very simply put, 6 hours. 6 hours. So totally unrelated to anything in the bodybuilding world. 6 hours is how much music I have to have prepared for my bands who will be playing starting a week from tomorrow. So that will be, the 23rd, and then we'll also be playing the 24th. So 2 nights back-to-back, we have to have 6 hours of material put together. So, and one of these bands is... it's fairly new, so we're building up that particular band is responsible for 4 hours, which we're building up pretty much from scratch. So needless to say, my life has been dominated by band practice, rehearsal, etc. for a while now. And this is, of course, you know, my personal life. My professional life carries on as it always has. But as far as something that's a hobby, and let's be clear, we're getting paid for this gig. I'm not getting rich off of being a musician, not by any stretch of the imagination. But it's definitely one of those hobbies that is becoming very time consuming. But once this is done and gone, then we'll have a good base of material then to work from, and so future gigs won't be quite so bad. It's just we've been taking a little bit of a hiatus from the big band. The smaller band is a new venture. So anyway, thank you for joining me and allowing me to kick things off on a little bit of a tangent here. So my name is Darren Starr. I appreciate you joining me once again. I think this is episode 42. It's middle of February here, the day after Valentine's Day, February 15th. It's my brother's birthday. Happy birthday, Colin. Hope all is well back in Oregon, other side of the country. I should go back and visit soon. There is up on the website, there is a new poll up. So if you go to 5starphysique.com, that's star with 2 R's, 5starphysique.com, there's a big graphic there. Scroll down beyond that, and there is a poll question. We're going to be getting to that in just a few minutes here, and we'll go over the details. Basically, you know, I think there's an issue with posing routines at bodybuilding shows. And so I give you a few options there, and we're going to go over those. I would like to hear what you have to say. So go and vote on that, and then send me a note and justify your vote as well, because I want to hear what you... I have very strong opinions on this, but I want to know what you think. So because I'm just one voice, but I would like to know if I'm kind of on my own on this, or if there's a general consensus that, yeah, something needs to change here. So as I mentioned, band practice has been the word of the week. So I've been continuing to knock out client updates. I brought on a couple of new people this week as well, which is very exciting always. I think, you know, one of the things that I do for the clients that I work with is my primary mechanism of getting giving feedback is through recording voice notes. Much like I'm sitting here at my computer with this microphone in front of me right now recording this podcast, I have a separate recorder that I use, but I use the same microphone. So I'm sitting here and I just record notes for my clients and give them feedback on their check-ins, talk about their, you know, what I'm seeing in their progress picks, detailing changes that I'm making in their plans and why, giving feedback on videos that they've sent me, that kind of stuff. So I record one of those for everybody. And then also oftentimes throughout the week, I'll give people feedback on videos that they've sent, even if it's not their check-in day, just because, you know, I get enough of that stuff sent up and it becomes a little bit of a backlog. So I've got to kind of clear it out and provide feedback on that. And I don't like to just say, you know, if somebody sends me like 7 videos to look at, I'm not going to say like, looks great, keep doing what you're doing. There's always something that we can be adjusting. You know, the thought that perfect form is something that doesn't really exist, it's something that we can shoot for. But you're never going to get there. You know, it's that elusive end of the rainbow that you're always chasing. So there's always some feedback that I can provide to help somebody do things better. So I had a bunch of client updates yesterday. I had a bunch of additional voice notes to record. So I went back through my archives. I recorded 25 notes yesterday, which is a lot of me sitting around talking. And I'm thinking like, wow, I hope I still have a voice when it comes time to do the podcast. Tomorrow, today, actually. So the good thing is Thursday for me is a very light day. I've just got a handful of clients to go over their updates with. So that's why we do the podcast today. So we had, what was it? We did band practice on Tuesday night with the 5-piece, which is the loud version with the drummer and the bass player. Went over some new stuff there. Really excited about that. Things are really coming together there. We've got our new drummer. He's really kind of getting up to speed right now. Pretty much a total pro. he's picking up this stuff pretty quickly. And then last night, we had a practice with just the trio, just me and the singers, which forms the other group. And this is the one that's responsible for putting 4 hours of music together. So we added a couple new things last night, went back and revisited some things that we haven't played in a bit. We're taking tonight off, and then we're meeting again tomorrow night to go over still more stuff. And then we're probably going to practice 2 times next week. And then we actually have our performances on Friday and Saturday. So I spend so much time talking about it just because it is a big deal. It's stressing me out a little bit. It's demanding a lot of time. Like, you know, I'm sitting here at my desk, you know, thank God I work at home, but I'm sitting here recording these voice notes, going through spreadsheets, responding to emails. I'm like, I need to take a break. Okay. Over to the piano. I got to figure this stuff out. So it's not really a break. What was a break, however, was today in the gym. I finally took a day off. It's been about 2 weeks since I've had a rest day. So I still went to the gym. I did some cardio. And, okay, I'm going to call myself out here. This is one of the reasons why I have a coach of my own, just because it's very difficult for me to hold myself accountable. The problem is my coach is very forgiving when it comes to cardio. Like right now it's off season. We're trying to grow. So he said, "Yeah, just do a little bit," but he hasn't said you must get this done. So I take that as being, well, it's more of a suggestion than anything else. So I'm a horrible client, basically, is what I'm saying. So today I did my first deliberate, legit, on a machine cardio session in, I'm going to say, 4 months. I think that's right. Maybe three. It's been a while. My point is. So, It was kind of simultaneously awful and nice. So it was awful in the, you know, cardio is, you know, it's kind of, if it's not awful, you're not doing it correctly. But it'd been so long since I've done it. Like I was able to actually attack it with a pretty good level of intensity. Like, oh, what's this like? Oh, what's this stuff coming off my face? Is this, oh, I guess this is what people call sweat. Okay. Cause I don't usually sweat a whole lot when I'm lifting. Sweat is a factor of, you know, how hard you're working and also what your environment is. And usually I'm fairly cold in the gym. So anyway, not a big sweater, but I was sweating today. I'm like, oh God, this is tricky. But 30 minutes flew by. So it was kind of a good proof of concept to me. Like, okay, I can still do it. It's kind of nice. It's a little embarrassing that I haven't done any for so long, but you know, when you're trying to put on weight and you can only eat so much, like I'm kind of at my capacity as far as how much I can eat right now, it feels like, as far as how many times during the day, how much per meal I can squeeze in. If we're trying to keep things relatively clean, I just don't know how I can get much more in. So doing cardio almost seems counterproductive, but then, you know, you walk up the stairs and you're like out of breath by the time you get 2/3 of the way up and it's like, I need to go do some cardio. So another personal note this week, I think I mentioned last week, you know, I did a little roundup on the TV that we'd been watching. I just have to give a shout out to the show that I'm watching right now. I know it's ancient history for a lot of people who have seen this and a lot of people don't care, but Battlestar Galactica, the reimagined version of it that came out in the early 2000s, not the one from the late 70s, early 80s. Holy crap, this show is amazing. I just finished the first season, and I can say pretty clearly, I think it's probably my favorite season of any TV show I've ever seen. It is a science fiction show, yeah, but really, I mean, more than anything else, it's a military character drama that just happens to be set in space. It's all about the characters start to finish, and the development of them, and there just happens to be an alien force involved, and they're on spaceships. But it is absolutely phenomenal. Like the writing, the acting, the directing, just the look and feel of the episodes, the tech of the world, the fact that everything is kind of low tech for being a sci-fi show. I mean, it's just so cool. So cool. So if you haven't seen that, it's on Prime Video. I think you can also watch it on Hulu. There's 4 seasons of it. It actually starts with a 3-hour miniseries that kind of kicks everything off. And then there's 4 seasons of the actual show after that. So if you're at all inclined to sci-fi or anything military or even just really good TV, go for this. Give it a shot, and you will not regret it. And if you do, it ain't my fault. It's just because you have no taste, clearly. So let's talk about the poll that's up on the website. So once again, go to 5starphysique.com. It's right on the homepage, whether you're on desktop or mobile. Scroll down. The poll is right there. Go cast your vote. The question that I'm asking, let me give it to you, quote, just a straight quote from the website. It says, "With regard to posing routines at NPC shows, what do you most think should be changed. Now, the options that I give you, there are five options. So you got to pick the one that you think is most appropriate. So we could do, these are all potential options here, shorter duration routines set to house music. Currently, routines, and I'm talking about for women's physique, for bodybuilding, and for classic physique, for those three divisions, there are currently 90-second routines, 90-second posing routines, and everybody brings their own music, so you've got to pick what music you want to do it to, you've got to cut it down, you've got to give it to people on a CD or in digital format now these days, it depends on the show. So option one is shorter duration routines set to house music. So the house is just going to play music, they're going to call people out, they're going to give them a shorter time frame. There's no music change, which is what takes up a lot of the time behind the scenes. It also requires a separate dedicated person back there managing all that stuff. So if we do it to house music and make the routine shorter, that's option number one. Another option is shorter duration routines, but still with the individual music. So you've still got the logistical challenges of having everybody bring in their music, but we're going to shorten the routines to 60 seconds, 45 seconds, 30 seconds, something like that. Those are, you know, that's another option. Now, another one, fewer divisions performing routines. You know, maybe routines should just be something for bodybuilding. You know, maybe classic physique and women's physique don't need routines. You know, do you think that's the case? Go vote. Another option, cut down on how many people are doing it. Maybe only the class winner, the top two, the top three in each class perform routines, which means you're going to have a lot of people preparing routines that then don't get to do them on stage. So a little disappointing, but, you know, from an audience perspective, you're seeing, you know, the top level competitors doing their routines. Presumably, the voting option is not clear here, but presumably then still to individual music and still 90-second routines, not cutting down the duration or how the music is handled or anything like that. So top, class winner, top two, top three, top five. I have heard of some shows doing it like that already, but typically the standard is everybody who competes does a routine. And so if you cross over, you're only going to do one routine. So if you compete in open, novice, and masters, you're not doing three routines. You're doing it once, you know, based on the order, how finals progress, whichever division gets called up first, you'll do your routine there, and then you will not do it as they call out subsequent divisions. So, and the final option is change nothing. So if you're happy with the way it's set up right now, great. That's your option. So the reason why this question comes about, and this is kind of related to a topic from last week talking about judging creep and how, you know, the standards really, you know, evolve over time in not a good way to allow a little bit more crossover potential between the divisions. The lines get blurred, and then especially for the women, and also this happened for men's physique, you know, the competitors in the division start to get bigger than what was initially envisioned, and so then they try and redefine things by introducing a new division. So my concern here is that this will happen again before too long. We're going to have another division appear, and it's probably going to be another division that has posing routines, and already there's a problem with finals running too long. If you've ever gone to a show and stuck it out through the end waiting for your male bodybuilding friend, who is pretty much always last to get off stage, and you've stuck around there waiting until midnight, 1 a.m. I've heard of shows going on as late as 2:30 in the morning. You can see this is a real problem. So if you're voting to change nothing, that means that, you know, it means you're younger at heart than I am, and you have the ability to stay up late enough to watch those shows. So that's not necessarily a bad thing, but that is an option. So once again, we could do shorter routines, but still with individual music, shorter routines with house music, fewer divisions performing routines, only the top, you know, the class winner or the top two or three doing routines, or change nothing. So go to 5starphysique.com, cast your vote. I want to hear from you. And then also, you know, if you've got a thought on that, scroll back up to the top, click on contact, fill out the form, and send me your argument. Let me know how you voted and why. And if you think it's a stupid question, let me know and why. I'm not going to poison the well and let you know how I voted. If you've listened to this podcast for any length of time, you probably have a good idea. But I will let you make your determination and then figure it out from there. And we'll talk about it next week. So go cast your vote. Tell your friends to vote as well. Let's get some response up there. I have one gym pet peeve, and this was based on yesterday's workout, which was a chest workout, and this might be more related to the gym where I go, which is a great facility, but, you know, no facility is perfect. the little things that you put on top of the weight stacks. Like you've got a cable weight stack somewhere and it goes in 10 pound increments. And there's always these like 2.5 or 5 pound weights that, that you can put on there so that you're not necessarily always making a 10 pound jump. Where the hell are those damn things? Like, I know that there are two of those somewhere in this gym and they're 5 pounds and I can never find either of them. I have occasionally seen both of them. So I know there are two, but I don't know where they go. You'd think they'd be around the weight stack area, the cables, but I can never find them. Never find them. So I look like, okay, well, where are all the handle attachments stored? Okay, over here and over here. Nope, don't see anything. Well, okay, there's other selectorized machines over here. Maybe some dumbass took it over to the pullover machine and stuck them on the weight stack over there because, you know, because he's a dumbass. I don't know. Well, let me go check. No. Walk around. So I spend 10 minutes looking for this stupid thing because, damn it, I would do cable flies with 65 pounds, not 70. And, you know, it's a stubborn thing more than anything else. But where the hell are they? Where are they? Come on. It's driving me nuts. So what they did, because I think they recognize this, and so instead of just getting more of those things, they installed these carriage bolts that go through the plates. Because you know how you, typically the top plate on a stack will have a hole where you can stick the pin so it's not just dangling loose or it's not getting lost on the floor or anything like that. So it means that basically, you know, this is disengaged from the stack, but it's a place where you can put the pin so it doesn't get lost. So they stuck a carriage bolt through there with a big like 4-inch section of it that's sticks out in the front so that you can actually like hang a 5 or 2.5 pound plate on it or something like that. The problem then is the selectorized pin, like the thing that actually has all the holes in it. So, you know, the pin that you pull out is the thing that you stick it into. Like you stick it through the weight and then there's a big chrome or stainless steel pin inside that holds the pin that you're sticking out. I'm doing a terrible job describing this. Sorry. The problem is when you stick a 5 pound plate on the front of that carriage bolt, it tilts the whole thing. So then when you lift the weight and you then release it on the negative portion, it gets caught on the top of the weight stack and it doesn't go back all the way down. So, it was like a for effort, but let's just buy some more of those weight add-ons, please. Anyway, it's probably just me, but I'm sure some people out there can relate. So we have a few primary topics to discuss this week. This is one that was kind of a short one, and I really gave a short rundown on this to a client last week. So earlier this week, Kendall, if you're listening, get better soon. I think she's recovering, she's been sick for a long time, like a couple weeks. It's just like one thing after the other. It's just, you know, first of all, I don't think it was strep, but it's like flu-like symptoms. And then it's, you know, a sinus infection. It's this and that. And it's like, holy crap. It's just a bad string. And so I just wanted to talk a little bit about not so much recovery for how to get over that stuff and how to get back into action, but what to expect when it does happen. Because a lot of things go on in your body and none of them are good when you're out of the gym for a long time after you've been going so regularly and you've been on your diet. So, you know, the problem with something like this is, especially if you have something that's contagious, like even if, you know, you felt good enough to lift, you probably shouldn't. You should keep yourself out of the general population so as not to spread sickness around and get everybody else sucked down into your little pit of misery with you. So just stay home. But you know, it will oftentimes impact your appetite as well as like, you know, your ability to breathe. So it's not like you can just like, I'm going to do cardio at home or whatever. Well, you can't breathe. That's kind of hard. And then your appetite takes a hit. You know, you're sick to your stomach. You can't eat anything. It's just like soup and crackers. So your diet's off. You can't do any cardio. You can't go lift. So what happens? Well, what it feels like happens is you turn into a big, giant ball of fatty goo is what it feels like. So, and there's a couple reasons for that. So there is, we're all familiar with the pump. You know, we go to the workout, we chase the pump, get swole, et cetera. Well, there's the acute pump, which you get and then will dissipate within a couple hours tops after the workout. But then there's a residual pump that sticks around as well. So if you're training legs twice a week, they're always going to have some residual pump to them. So, which is one good reason to train them twice a week. So they, you know, if you train them once a week, you hit them once, you carry around a little residual pump for a couple days, and then by the time you come back and hit them next time, that's all gone. So And, you know, with the rest of your body, you know, you're hitting back, so you're working biceps a little bit indirectly. So even if you're not training arms twice a week, your biceps get some action, so they're doing some residual stuff as well. So they're getting a little bit of that residual pump upkeep as well. When you get yourself out of the gym for like a week, all of that residual pump fades. So any kind of additional fullness that you are feeling as a result of that will fade as well. So it's going to feel like things are atrophying. And also, when you combine that with your glycogen stores getting depleted and not getting replenished, because if you're not putting in the physical work, you're not pushing glycogen into the muscle. You know, it's all getting depleted, it's gone, it fades. So you're feeling like things are atrophying because of that as well. And when you have no muscle fullness, you feel fatter. That's all there is to it. Everything feels squishy. Nothing feels hard. Nothing feels dense. But the fat is still there. It's unchanged. And so it starts to feel like it's taken over. And you start to feel like you're putting on weight. When, you know, realistically, you're probably losing weight and feeling fatter. You're like, how the hell does that happen? So that is the magic of what happens internally in the muscle as far as glycogen and residual pump. So that's what happens. And, you know, this is also true if you go on vacation. You know, even if you remain somewhat active, like, you know, a lot of people go on vacation, they'll do a lot of walking around, et cetera. It doesn't matter. It's not lifting. You know, your body, it doesn't make your body respond in the same way. And nobody's going to get a pump from walking around unless you're going to, you know, Machu Picchu and going up a ton of stairs or something like that. Then you can maybe get a little makeshift glute workout in, but it's still not the same. If you're on vacation, it's much the same thing. You know, anytime that you're not lifting for an extended period of time, you can expect to lose some of that residual pump. You can expect to have some glycogen depletion. You can expect to feel fat. You can expect to drop weight probably. That's assuming, you know, your diet doesn't have significant changes. So, you know, if you take time off from the gym and you start eating like a jackass, then you might not be losing weight. But if everything else is equal, you probably will. And that's to be expected. It's okay. As far as kind of dealing with the sickness and, you know, directly and not just the expectations, one thing that I often recommend to people, especially if it's something fairly benign like a cold, is to front load. You know, a lot of people will do emergency, you know, okay, that's fine, but I think something that's more effective would be zinc, specifically sublingual zinc, which can be difficult to find, but a lot of pharmacy stores, Walgreens, CVS, etc., will carry that. It's just a strip that dissolves under your tongue. That method of absorption is much more effective for zinc, and if you get a lot of that in your system early on, like as soon as you notice these symptoms are starting to hit you, it does have an ability to lessen the severity and the duration of those symptoms. It's not going to put the cold off completely, but it'll make you suffer with it for a shorter period of time and not quite so bad. So that's the first thing. And then there's a question of recovery. Like, you know, how long do you wait until you get back into the gym? And it really depends on what you're dealing with. And oftentimes I would break it down into two categories. There is a category of things that you really just need your immune system to fight off. And then there's a category of things that you need medication to fight off. So antibiotics, that kind of stuff. And again, this is kind of ignoring for the time being the issue of contagion. So if you're contagious, just stay out of the gym. I think oftentimes by the time symptoms have cleared or are starting to clear, you're no longer contagious. I don't quote me on that, but I've heard medical people say that before. So typically you're most contagious before you actually start to develop symptoms. And then once you actually start to show, but once they've kind of started to run their course, you're typically not contagious anymore in most cases. Assuming that you're not contagious, let's just make that assumption. If your immune system has work to do, and you're not relying on a medication to get over this, I always err on the side of taking a little bit more rest, another day or two, just because the more you put your body through and the more you're asking from it as far as recovery from a workout, the harder it's going to be for your immune system to get body resources necessary to really do its job appropriately. Now, if you're relying on a medication and your immune system, you know, it's something that your immune system can't fight. You know, it's a sinus infection or whatever. You need a medication for that. Okay, great. So, you know, assuming you can breathe and you're not contagious, go work out. You know, I mean, as long as you can make it an effective session, then do it. You're not going to put yourself in a deeper hole necessarily by putting yourself through a workout when it's the medication that's going to be responsible for getting this out of your system. So as far as dealing with sickness, recovering from it, and knowing what to expect going into it, there you go. I had a request because I did put out a request for topics last night. And, you know, a lot of these topics, you know, some of them will require a little bit of research and some planning. Some of them, I've talked about this with clients so many times, I feel like I could just, you know, extemporaneously rattle off a good conversation about it. So I did have a client who recommended, how do you achieve balance? You know, how can you, the phrase that I'm going to use here is, how do you normalize bodybuilding within the framework and the context of your life? And so this could mean, you know, bodybuilding as just kind of a general pursuit, like whether you have competitive aspirations or not. You know, the way that I define bodybuilding is anytime you are following some kind of a structured diet and workout program with the aim of improving your overall body aesthetic. That is how I define bodybuilding. Competitive bodybuilding is clearly just, you know, one level deeper as far as the definition is concerned. So how do you normalize bodybuilding? So whether you're competing or not, it is intelligent to do it in phases. So having kind of an off season and then a pre-contest phase. And if you're not competing, you can call it something else. You know, you can call it just a generic cut or whatever. But going between those phases is typically, you know, it's the general consensus is it's the most effective way to approach it. I know there are arguments to the contrary that say, you know, the old school growth phase is no more. Nobody should be doing that. And I always tell people, well, you know what? A lot of people should be doing that. Maybe not everybody, but it is a solid recommendation still for a lot of reasons that I've talked about before. Maybe it'll be worth talking about again. So the assumption with this discussion is that whether you are competing or whether you are just looking to, you know, get the most out of the effort that you're putting in, the assumption is that whatever your target is, whether it's a stage or a photo shoot or anything like that, you want to bring your absolute best, and you're not going to accept half-assing it. Because if you do accept half-assing it, that's one way to normalize bodybuilding. If you're going to say like, oh, I'm going to skip some cardio, you know, I'm going to follow my diet about 70 to 80% of the way, you know, that gives you a lot of flexibility for still being kind of normal with bodybuilding. So the first way to be a bodybuilder and a normal person is just to not throw everything that you can into your bodybuilding pursuits and kind of half-ass it a little bit. And that's not necessarily a knock on anybody's effort. I mean, it kind of, when I say half-ass, it kind of sounds like it, but you know, I don't accept it from clients, but if somebody wanted to work towards a show and they were coaching themselves, I mean, that's totally acceptable. And, you know, some people might say, you know, we need people to half-ass it to make the rest of us look better. that might be my approach. but also, you know, I mean, it's something that everybody does for themselves. And so everybody has their own reasons for doing it. And just because you are super hardcore and this means everything to you and it's your life doesn't mean that that has to be the case for everybody else. So just, you know, chill out with your damn self, take a step back, and don't take yourself too seriously, okay? But for the purposes of this discussion, the assumption is going to be that you aren't okay with half-assing it. So you want to go all the way, but still, you know, how can we be kind of normal? So the subtitle for this section that I wrote is how to be a bodybuilder and still pass yourself off as a normal person. So this is a topic that is a lot more important to some people than it is to others. I want to just clarify that right out of the get-go here. So there are a lot of people who are like, balance, screw that. I don't need balance. You know, I live on my own. I don't have kids. I have a dog. My dog understands that I've got to do cardio. I do it with him, whatever. So balance is for people who want to finish second. Okay, great. Again, it's not for everybody. And so if you put yourself in that category, bravo, I salute you. This discussion is not for you. You can listen anyway. I'm not going to kick you out, but you won't get much from it. So you can maybe gain a little bit of insight into your fellow competitors here, though. So it is a lot more important to some people. So you've got to think about people who have spouses who are not into bodybuilding and they want to be supportive, but you know, for a lot of people, support has limits, and it's like, you're going to do what crazy thing now? Really? For how long? Oh, God. What does that mean for me? You know, that means, you know, I'm going to be doing a lot more with the kids. I still have a job to do as well. It means, you know, I've got to, you know, cook for fewer people. You want me to help you meal prep your stuff that's going to be separate from ours? We're not going to be eating as a family now? What? I mean, you know, it's a very real thing. So, and again, more important for some people than others. You've got to find balance with your work. You know, some people will have their job impacted to some extent by this. It kind of depends on what you do, family, et cetera. You know, I've mentioned before, you know, I have a coach and I've looked for coaches for a long time in the past. And I did remember emailing one guy who was a prep coach, and supposedly that was what he did. And his response when I said, "Hey, are you taking new clients, et cetera?" His response was, "Well, I'm about to enter contest prep for myself, so I'm actually trying to shed some clients right now, so I have less to do." I'm like, okay. So apparently you're just doing this on the side or something. I don't know. Or, you know, suddenly you're going into a pre-contest phase and suddenly your bills get lower. Usually it's the other way around. So for me, I'm like, I'm going to do a show, so I need to pick up a few extra clients. That's my thought here. But, you know, if you want to put yourself in a bubble, more power to you. So what it comes down to as far as achieving this balance, more than anything else, is the most important word when it comes to bodybuilding. That is planning. All of this stuff has to be planned ahead, long term, well in advance. You've got to understand and truly implement the difference between phases throughout a calendar year. So specifically talking about the two big ones, your off season or your growth phase, and then your pre-contest or your cutting phase. If you're doing it correctly, you should spend more time in off-season or growth than in pre-contest. Now, also, if balance is important to you, it may be that you only compete in one show a year or less, maybe a show every other year. You know, the less time you spend actively getting ready for a show, being in quote unquote contest prep mode, the better. So that is the phase that really puts a strain on relationships, on families, on some work environments, etc. So that's when you need to have, you need to be sacrificing more, when precision matters more. You know, it's more stressful as well. Being in that phase for one show for most people means 4 months, 16 weeks. 4 months out of the year is a third of the year. Now, let's say you want to do two shows. Okay, well, you know, are you going to do two shows that are 2 weeks apart? That's a pretty easy sell. Do you want to do a show in April and then another one in August? Now we're talking about some balance issues, because now you're going to be in contest prep mode in some form or another for potentially up to 8 months. There's probably going to be a little bit of a decompression phase after that first show, because you'll have almost 4 months before the second show, but perhaps, you know, that lasts a month. So you're still spending 7 months out of eight in a pre-contest mentality. And, you know, the physical grind and the physical wear and tear on your body is one thing, but there's also just the metabolic wear and tear, and also the stress accumulation from it as well. I mean, a lot of people truly enjoy every last bit of the process and they're all smiles the whole way through. I mean, I honestly believe that most people that come across that way on social media are completely faking it, and they just don't post the videos of themselves crying over their cardio session or their 110 calorie breakfast that they get to have or whatever. So I think there's a lot to be said for being a little bit more real on social media. But I will stipulate that there is a possibility that some people just absolutely love every bit of the process. Great. So it's not stressing you out so much, but still physically it's taking a toll on your body. And so spending a little bit less time cutting throughout the year, picking your spots a little bit more carefully, can be a really good thing, especially if balance is something that is important. So just keep in mind, when you are on prep, it's not just you that it impacts, but it's the people around you as well. So it is by nature a selfish endeavor, which is not necessarily in and of itself a bad thing, but it is something worth considering and really thinking about the people around you and how it impacts. So maybe one show a year or one show every other year, et cetera. You know, I've toyed around with the idea of doing one later this year, and I was talking with my friend Roger. I'm like, hey, you should do this show as well. It's, you know, it's in August here in Knoxville. And he's like, oh, no, my wife would kill me. So, you know, he's competed many times, but not in the past few years. So he understands. And so, you know, he still goes through, I mean, he's ever been as hardcore as he has been in the past. He's just, you know, much like I've been doing for the past several years, just without an actual competition, just doing it because we enjoy the process. And the process does change when you shift into a pre-contest mode. So during the off season, it's all about maintaining your routine, enjoying a little bit of flexibility, but not missing meals. Like, you can sub some stuff out here and there, but you got to eat. If you get lackadaisical on getting in meals, it's not going to be a good thing. And suddenly you're in truly like an off season mode where you're just not doing what you need to do. We should really call it a growth phase instead. I've never been too caught up on the semantics of what we want to call this particular phase, but off season, you know, if you're treating that as like, well, I'm going to take some time off to just be, you know, average and slack a little bit, it's not that. I mean, if you have true, truly ambitious goals for where we want to take your physique, there is no true off season. You know, you're always doing something, at least not for more than like a week, maybe two. You're still doing, you know, ideally some cardio. This is where I say do as I say, not as I do. I'm doing a little bit of cardio, but not much. You know, I mean, you're not spending a whole lot of time doing that. So this is where your family gets a chance and to experience you as more of a normal person. So, you know, if your husband or wife says, hey, you want to go out for dinner? This is your chance to say something other than doesn't fit my meal plan, or sure, let me take my food scale. You can be a little bit more normal, you know, during an off season phase, during a growth phase. So you need to maintain the routine though. So, one thing I tell people when it comes to contest prep is if you struggle to make it to the gym and you're like, well, I want to lift 6 days a week, but I only made it in 4 days this time. You have to really question, like, you know, is contest prep for you? And maybe it gets to a point where it is, if you can fix that. But the gym really needs to be a complete, and I'm going to say this for emphasis here, nice and slow. The gym needs to be a completely and totally non-negotiable element of your life if you're to do this seriously. Now, that doesn't mean you can't get sick and miss some days. But if you find, you know, when your schedule gets upset in any little way and it's the gym that gets sacrificed, that's not a good sign. You know, I'm sitting back here and I'm thinking, I don't know. You know, there are always exceptions. There are always some valid reasons for missing some time, but those really should be few and far between. It just needs to be ingrained as part of your schedule. Like, well, this is what I do. You know, I've got to wake up every morning. I've got to take a shower every day. I've got to eat dinner every day. I've got to take my dog outside every day. I've got to go to the gym every day, or, you know, 5 or 6 days a week, whatever. So, the off season is about maintaining that routine, driving up expectations on performance, and continuing to force progressive overload. So, pre-contest, you know, sacrifice will be necessary, period. Now, for some people, it's going to be more sacrifice. It might be a little bit less, but you need to have a conversation with everybody else who could potentially be impacted by this. So, you know, spouse, maybe kids, if they're old enough to be a part of the conversation, you know, if it's something that could impact your work, and I'm thinking specifically like, you know, after work hours commitments, you know, extra project work, stuff like that, you might want to tell your boss, hey, you know what, this is a phase where I'm going to be less available for that kind of stuff. If, you know, if it's something that's optional, you just have that conversation and make sure that everybody is clear with that. And understand your time commitments going forward. You know, plan on taking, you know, an hour a day for cardio. Or 90 minutes a day for cardio. Maybe it never gets there. You certainly hope it doesn't, but if it does need to get there, you need to know that you've got the time already carved out for that. So that's the big thing is if you really enjoy the fluctuation between those two phases, between off season and between pre-contest, you're going to make being a quote unquote normal person and a bodybuilder something ideas that can coexist a little bit more readily. So definitely enjoy that off season, that growth phase. So you know, this is where you can have that flexibility where, you know, if the sweetie asks you out for dinner, you can say, yeah, we can do that. You're not going to do it 5 nights a week, but you can do that. You can be normal. And even during pre-contest, you know, there's always cheat meals and stuff like that, but those are kind of things that have to be planned. So, you know, keep in mind, so it's good to ask your coach, what's your philosophy on cheat meals? You know, how often are they? I know it's something that, you know, is very dependent on an individual, but, you know, more often than not, how frequent are they? Do you have any weird stipulations for them or anything like that? And just kind of get an idea, and then you can have a conversation with your spouse like, hey, you know what, we can still expect, you know, I'm going to have a cheat meal every week or two where we can do something like this, but, you know, my coach is going to tell me when it is, and we can't really do it spontaneously. And, you know, I think if you've got a supportive spouse, they will understand that and work with you on that. So Anyway, the big thing is plan ahead and have the conversation so that everybody knows what you're getting into and nobody gets surprised by any of this stuff. Next up, a quick little detour here. So music of the week. We've talked about a couple of things the last couple weeks. And today I wanted to talk about... I'm really excited about this band. I know a lot of you have heard of them. It's Greta Van Fleet. The album is From the Fires, which is, if you go on Spotify, it's the only album there. They do have another release, but I have not been able to find it, at least online for streaming purposes. And, you know, let's be clear, I haven't gone to a store to buy a CD in probably 10 years. So I haven't looked for it there, but I would love to hear it at some point. If you're not familiar with his band, well, first of all, you should be. From the Fires, the album that they put out, is, I think it's like 8 songs. It's pretty short. It's like 35 minutes or something like that. It's worth 35 minutes of your time to listen to this whole thing start to finish. It is really good. So they have been... you know, they've been kind of compared to Zeppelin. And if you listen to them, like from the opening notes of the first song, you're like, oh, yeah, this is obviously a Zeppelin tribute band. But I think they're a little bit more than that. Now, the singer is extremely reminiscent of a younger Robert Plant from Zeppelin. I mean, it is uncanny how much he sounds like Robert Plant without all of the histrionics and excesses that made some people listen to Plant and be like, boy, I wish he hadn't have done that. I mean, it's just, and mostly, I know if you've listened to a lot of live Led Zeppelin material, know what I'm talking about there. Plant's always a little bit more restrained on the studio albums, but the guy in Greta Van Fleet, he's phenomenal in his ability to channel that kind of energy. The guitar work is very reminiscent of Page as far as the sound. I think, you know, the riff writing in general, not nearly as creative, but that's like, you know, it's a hard criticism to really put on somebody, because when it comes to comparing, you know, riff masters, you've pretty much got to start that conversation with Jimmy Page, so it's okay. The bass work is great. Where the comparison falls apart is on the drums, just because there is no other John Bonham. He was one of a kind, absolutely. And I was listening to this album, and I was listening to it on headphones, and you know, it's solid. It is really solid. There's really good writing start to finish. There's really no weak points on the album. And if I was going to say anything about it, it's just like, well, drummer's not John Bonham, but nobody is. So again, if that's your worst criticism, you know you're in a good space here. So imagine if Zeppelin just materialized today and put out an album. This is kind of what it would sound like. So anyway, if you haven't checked it out, do it. Greta Van Fleet, From the Fires. So I did want to pick up briefly here on a topic from last week as well. So we talked about judging creep and how the standards kind of evolve over time. I alluded to that earlier in the episode here today as well. So I just wanted to go over a couple things, because I started to dig a little bit deeper into some of the guidelines, some of the judging rules that the NPC has posted. And there were a couple more things that I thought was very interesting here. So for figure, there are two phrases that really stuck out to me here. The first phrase, as far as what they're looking for, quote, small degree of muscularity. And the other one is, quote, no visible striations. So I'd like you to look at, you know, just go to musculardevelopment.com, browse through their archives of shows, and find somebody who has won their division in a figure class that fits either of those categories. Now, for bikini, you know, these are the things, and I think I mentioned much of this last week as well, but I just wanted to go over two key phrases here. So the guidelines, what they're looking for and what they're looking to reward for the bikini division, quote, balance and shape. And the second thing is, quote, overall physical appearance, including complexion, skin tone, poise, and overall presentation, end quote. So first of all, is this a bodybuilding show or is this a pageant? And let's be very clear. For a bikini, there is no mention of muscularity at all. Like there's nothing in there that says, you know, you should look like you've been in the gym. There's nothing to that degree at all. Balance and shape, what is that? You want to talk about vague. And I know I was getting on this last week and I was kind of, it was just an extended rant, but this really, really ticks me off, just how vague all of this crap is. This is completely and totally unacceptable. So what I think the NPC should really do is look at who's winning their shows and then go back and then describe those winners when they're writing the judging criteria. And let's actually, you know, put some photos to it. You know, I mean, say, this is what we're looking for. This degree of muscularity, not small degree of muscularity. Because what is that? You know, I mean, my 10-year-old niece has a small degree of muscularity. You know, I mean, I don't know what they're looking for. What, that is too vague. No visible striations. Okay, great. That is a very solid judging criteria that is never, ever adhered to. So what is it? What is it? Also, for bikini, they're talking about the presentation and, you know, what happens up on stage. They actually mandate half turns, front pose, back pose, and they specifically say not quarter turns. So it raises the question, why can't they provide that same level of clarity for men's physique? Because there are a lot of NPC men's physique shows, and if you look on YouTube, either at stage shots when they have men's physique callouts, or in posing workshops that you can find videos of, they have you'll see quarter turns quite often. There is a side men's physique pose, but you know, it doesn't usually. I've never been to a show where they do that, but I've had clients who have done shows where they want quarter turns, and so it's typically something that I will have my clients work on, just because you never know. You know, are they going to ask for this or not? So that really needs to be clarified, and they need to enforce that as well. So if they want men's physique doing quarter turns, great, put it in there, and if not, put it in the rules that there are no quarter turns. You know, it's a front and back pose and that's it. For bikini, you know, a client asked me about this, and I thought initially it was a stupid idea. I'm like, where'd she get that idea from? And then I see it's actually in the rules here. Bikini competitors are advised to bring two suits to check-in. And my comment on that was, what the fuck? Two suits, because one isn't expensive enough. You want people to buy two suits. And the reasoning for that being, well, we don't know if your suit's going to be acceptable or not. You know, we don't know if the coverage is going to be sufficient. And let's be clear, they did not. There's very, very little in the rules that talks about what is acceptable as far as suit design and coverage. So here's what it says. It's a two-piece. The bottom of the suit must be V-shaped. Okay, not really giving us a whole lot there. No thongs are permitted. Okay, that seems reasonable. Competitors can compete in an off-the-rack suit. Okay. All swimsuits must be in good taste. Okay. I don't know what that means. I know a lot of people who would say that bodybuilding shows in general aren't in good taste. So what do you mean there? Athletes will be warned about improper suits. Here's where it says, and are advised to bring two suits to check in. The fronts of the suits are too low and must be constructed higher. I don't know what that statement means. Again, quoting, the fronts of the suits are too low and must be constructed higher. I mean, is that a message to a suit designer or what? And again, are there any visuals available for any of this to talk about what is appropriate and what is not? No. Are there any specific guidance as far as what's needed as far as coverage on the back? No. What defines too low on the fronts, and who is that note actually to? We have no idea, but just bring two suits because we are lazy SOBs and we don't want to actually provide concrete guidelines for people. So just spend $500 on a suit and another $300 on a backup suit because, you know, you got money. So, you know, go for it. What the hell is that? Why do we as competitors tolerate this crap? We need to do better, and we need to demand better from the NPC as far as what they should be providing for guidelines here. Now, I also know that there are some states, some regions for competing where they are more or less conservative with what they need for their suits. Like I know in North Carolina, they say it's got to be 50% coverage. Okay. That's really hard to define, but that gives me something to go off of at least, you know, so you can look at the photos that suit designers will have on their website, and you can see the suits on the mannequins, and you can say, well, that looks like 50% coverage, or well, that looks significantly less than 50% coverage. So, you know, it's something to go off of at least. So that's a reasonable standard. And if you're close to that, like nobody's going to bring out a tape measure and measure your glute and make sure that the suit covers half of it. They're looking like, you know, does this look like it's about half? And if it looks like it's about half, then great, you're going to be just fine. So I find the lack of clarity to be totally not okay. Another thing, and this may generate a little bit of discussion or some dissent and disagreement, and that's okay. Why can't, because we talked last week about how, you know, women's physique is getting, you know, much the competitors are getting much bigger and, for lack of a term, freakier than what was initially set out in the guidelines for the division, because they really wanted to draw a clear line between this new women's physique division and women's bodybuilding, which has now, you know, mostly been phased out. So my question is, why can't there be a place for the freaky women? Why not? Why not? I mean, men's bodybuilding is pretty much right now for the NPC. It is a place where only enhanced athletes can be competitive. You know, I mean, so why not the same for women? I mean, you know, if women want to do that, why not? Same thing with men. If men want to do that, why not? You're not drug testing these shows. So the fact that you are kind of, you know, enforcing some kind of quasi drug test by saying, well, you know, you can't be too big, or, you know, you still need to have your quote unquote femininity, whatever the hell that means. It's ambiguous to me. I don't understand it. I don't get it. Because, I mean, there are some women that, you know, will just genetically be more predisposed to putting on muscle. And basically what you're saying with the setup of the show and the guidelines and the non-drug testing portion of the whole thing is, you can take whatever you want as long as you don't look like it. You know, and as long as we don't start to see any side effects that we don't like. So, I don't know. I mean, I think further clarification there is needed as well. So, you know, enforce the guidelines that you have. So if you're like, you can't be too big, great, enforce that in your damn judging. Or create a division where it's okay to be big. It's okay to be freaky. You know, it's a bodybuilding show. You know, for the men, that's what people want to come and see. They want to see the big ass freaks. So, I don't know. It's confusing. It's confusing. And I've talked about it a bunch, but I just wanted to clarify those points as well. So, for a closing thought this week, this is something that always kind of sticks in my craw when I see this on social media. Not because it's not valid, but it just makes me wonder about people. So all those messages that you get from people, typically, you know, when they are in pre-contest or post-show, they're celebrating success or whatever, they say, this is to all the people who hated me and doubted me, to all the haters and the doubters out there. I just want to stop for a second, just right there. How many people, how many of you listening to this have haters and doubters? And if you do, why are they still in your life? Why do you have anything to do with them? And I would say, you know, I'm talking about true haters and doubters. Like, I have people in my life who will say stuff to me like, I don't know why you do that, or I don't know how you do that, or I couldn't do that, I don't want to do that, you're crazy. That's not hating and doubting. That's just not understanding and having different priorities, and that's okay. That is okay. Like, I can't understand why you play golf for 5 hours a day on the weekends or whatever, but, you know, that's fine. I'm not going to criticize you for that. And they're not criticizing me. They're just saying, like, man, that seems kind of crazy. I don't know why you do that. I'm like, that's okay. You don't have to know why, because I'm doing it. That's not a hater. That's not a doubter. That's just somebody who doesn't understand. So do you actually have somebody in your life who says, you can't do this? I don't believe you can do this. You can't get this. Do those people exist? Do you have somebody that's like, I really can't stand the fact that you're doing this? I mean, I would argue that potentially my wife might get to that point eventually. But on a serious note, however, I mean, are there people that, I mean, do you have haters? People that want to see you fail? Somebody other than maybe a rival who wants to do better than you? Do you have haters? Do you have doubters? Do you have people that say that just don't believe that you can do whatever it is that you've set out to do? And if you have those people, why are they still in your life? Get rid of them, because you don't need them and you will be better off without them. That's it. So thank you for listening. Once again, everybody go vote. Go to 5starphysique.com, scroll down, click on the poll on the homepage, and tell me what needs to change with posing routines at NPC shows. Maybe nothing. Cast your vote there, and then shoot me a comment. Click back up, scroll back up to the top of the site, click on contact, send me a note, or contact me through Instagram at Darren_star. Send me a message there. Go to facebook.com/5starphysique, click on send message, and hit me up through there. Email me, Darren at Five Star Fitness. Send me a direct message on Twitter at Darren Starr, or I don't know. Can you send messages through Pinterest? I don't know. I know so little about Pinterest. It's sad, but I'm on there as well under the username of Five Star Physique. So thanks again, everybody, for listening. I really appreciate it. I hope everybody has a great week, and I'll catch you back here next week.